It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on into a Halloween edition of Sports Talk. We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. Steve Geller along with Mike Dettillier. And boy, oh boy, has the NOLA sports scene been frightening of late. Between the Saints and Pelicans, it has been brutal. And also brutal, Mike, the World Series last night for my
Steve, Giants. I wasn't going to bring it up.
That fifth inning is still hurting me, Mike.
But Steve, I used to work with a guy, and he would always say, Mike, it went from bad to worstesses. And so you watch the World Series last night in for your Yankees, and then you watch the Pelicans.
Exactly.
And that's it was from bad to worstesses, as they would say.
No, and then, yeah, obviously before that, you know, the Saints this weekend, the previous weekend, hopefully things are better going into this Sunday. We got the injury report coming out today. Mike, you heard a lot of it in the Sports Flash with Charlie. Full practice today. Tyrann Mathieu, that's a big positive. Obviously, we didn't think it was too serious. You saw he was just dealing with
illness,
Right, exactly. But still not practicing. Marshawn Lattimore with the hamstring issue. Bub Means, Kendra Miller, Rico Payton, also not practicing today, unfortunately. Corner Kendra Miller was limited yesterday, now not practicing with a hamstring issue. Limited also for the Black and Gold, though, today. Cedric Wilson Jr. upgraded, dealing with a hip issue. Derek Carr's oblique still has him limited with this team, but as we heard from coach and the quarterback himself, both are fully expecting him to suit up on Sunday. Juwan Johnson, that's a positive, too. Full go after being limited yesterday with a shoulder issue. Alvin Kamara still limited. We know he's banged up top to bottom. The guy's been gutting things out. Limited also, Nick Saldiveri, Jamal Williams, and then a full go, Shane Lemieux, Nephi Sewell, but then also popping up today, a new addition from yesterday's list, defensive tackle John Ridgeway with an oblique as well, like Derek Carr.
What?
He did not practice today. So we've got hamstrings. We got obliques. We've got, you know, toes.
Well, you learn about the human body, you know, every time you see that list. I mean, what catches my eye, Marshawn Lattimore, cornerback, and then you got Rico Payton, cornerback, and Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback. All missing, did not practice. Steve, no wonder they picked up Trey Herndon.
Right.
A couple of days ago, who's got some experience, certainly in the NFL. I scouted him when he was at Vanderbilt, undrafted free agent. Man, he played quite a few seasons with Jacksonville. He's got some starts under his belt. Hey, it might be a quick deal. Hey, kid, get in there.
Right.
We need you. But figure Marshawn out, most likely. Kool-Aid now with the did not practice.
The downgrade is a concern, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
And then Rico Payton, he's got a back injury?
Rico, where is he here? Yeah, back injury, back did injury. Not practice both days. And obviously we know, too, no Paulson Adebo. He's been out dealing with a broken femur.
Well, you can count them cornerbacks with a couple fingers now. So you get it why they picked up Trey Herndon. But, again, man, you hate to see injuries are going to happen, but when they hit at the same spot, that's, man, would really, really hurt your football team. And now look at the Panthers.
They got an injury list just like the Saints.
But most of those guys are full participants, are limited.
Yeah, some are just were, you know, like you said, full goes.
Like
full
Clowney and Ashawn, they got a veteran day off
yesterday. Sure, exactly. I mean, we know that well.
I was sort of tired, so I can't fool with that.
I'm tapping out.
Yeah, well, more than once. So you get it, but their injury list is pretty short when you look at it. did not participate.
Xavier Leggett, the rookie, was added today with a toe issue, is limited, so that's something concerning for them because they don't have a ton of weapons, obviously,
not
at that wide receiver spot.
Deontay Johnson going. No, they don't.
Where was
– Adam Thielen's got a hamstring also.
He was limited again today. You look at two, you mentioned corner for the Saints, though. Also, Mike, running back. Obviously, we know Alvin Kamara's banged up. You got Jamal Williams popping up on the list.
You better get Jordan Mims up.
I was going to say, they brought back Jordan Mims and also Jacob Cabote to the practice squad.
Man, so, yeah, I figured, Charlie and I talked about this when they cut him loose. I said, listen, he's coming back.
Cabote's, he's on the short list, right?
Yeah, hey, don't go too far. We're going to give you a ring and you can come back. But to me, you know, it seemingly that you kind of short-sheeted right there. Mims would be the guy. He's got some experience and understands the offense. And, man, that's a long injury list. And especially at corner, and now you're starting to kind of pound up also at the running back position.
How frustrated is this team, top to bottom, coaching staff, training staff, with a guy like Kendra Miller? Just whatever they do, whatever he seems to do, just cannot stay on the field for them.
Man, I'm frustrated, and I ain't on the staff.
Right, exactly.
I'm not a coach, and I'm not
sure
a trainer.
Fans are too, right?
So the thing that drives you nutty with it is you see he's got tremendous skills. When he's been in there, he has shown some playmaking skills, and he's explosive. Man, you see him, the way he hits the hole and he gets up the field, but he can't stay healthy. Come on. You can't stay available, then, you know, you're in the tub.
So corner and running back, we got to, you know, dial Deuce up, see if he got some snap. I know that's always the joke, and he'll be like, oh, heck no.
No, Deuce, man, what? I didn't hide my last carry many, many years ago with all that. But, again, Steve, it's man, when you get hit, you understand the list because you're going to get bumped and bruised this time of the year. But at one spot, and particularly at corner, now you're going up against, as Bobby would say, Little Bryce. We'll see how that works out. And basically Andy Dalton said today,
right,
I'm not going to play. They want me to take another week off. So it won't be like, you know, he's Superman going into the I don't think
he
they got
kind of disappointed in that,
no,
though, too. Like, hey, I'm ready to go.
You know, that got to come from the man.
Exactly,
come
right.
Come on. Man, the guy that signs them checks, the $22 billion man.
We got tons to talk about. Going to get into some Pelicans talk right after the break here on WWL. Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast will join us. Me and Mike Dettillier here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Stop by and say hey. There's Happy Halloween on WWL right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are at the Treasure Chest Casino. It's our Treasure Chest Thursday. Enjoying the views, the gambling, and the food here at the Game Bar and Grill. Now welcoming him in from the Locked On Pelicans podcast, Jake Madison. And, man, just a very similar start to the Saints season as the Pels, man. They won their first two and now haven't won a game since. Another brutal one last night, Jake. First off, though, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on to talk some hoops here.
Yeah, definitely. You look at last night's game, and I think obviously the biggest frustration point was seeing Zion Williamson having a rough night, struggling, finishes the evening with just 12 points, and something, his turnovers were at least a little bit limited from the 8 the previous evening, but that still seems to be an issue for him as well. And just, I don't know what it is. It just seems a lack of confidence from our big man.
You know, I think he's just trying to get into a rhythm, and when you look at how the Pelicans have struggled these past three games and three big losses to not particularly great teams, in my opinion. The Portland Trailblazers aren't good, and the Golden State Warriors were missing Steph Curry, which is a pretty significant thing for both of those games. You know, Zion's struggles in this one last night aren't ranking among, like, the top things. Certainly you want to see him take over a game and dominate, and that comes a game after he worked Draymond Green. He was really efficient in that first game. I think he had 31, 33 points. I forget what the exact number was, and he showed, like, oh, yeah, he's Zion Williamson. This is a guy who can be a top 20, top 15, top 10 player in the NBA, and then go completely silent the next night, you know, and not impact the game at all. I think it's just a little bit weird to me. And to me, that's more of a rhythm thing. Draymond Green is a generational defender, and he clearly upped his defense on Zion Williamson. And you would have liked to have seen Zion Williamson counter that more and try and take over this game and, you know, drag the team to a victory. But those type of off nights will happen. If on this four-game homestand you see him struggle as well, that's where I'll start to really be concerned. But it's the beginning of the year. Sometimes you just got to get into a slight rhythm like that. you know, I'm willing to give him somewhat of a pass, not a complete one, but certainly the way he played in last night's game, unable to rise to the occasion, is a big reason why they lost.
Jake, in looking at this team, and you didn't see it in the first two games, but you saw it afterwards. They have no facilitator on offense, you know, on the offensive side. And it goes to show you sort of built this with, you know, with Murray being the guy. He was going to be distraught at turns to drink, and everybody's going to get their shot. And he sort of was helping set up that. So much of it today without Javonte Murray is it's isolation moves. I mean, you're sort of doing this on your own. And I think you see why they traded for him, and it's a big hole, and you got nobody even in the same area code as him to be able to do that, to set other people up for shots. And, man, it's almost like watching one-on-one basketball. You don't have that guy that can set up other people to get scores.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at kind of what they've reverted to offensively, it's a lot of your turn, my turn. You go, I go, between Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and it's not really a cohesive thing. It doesn't look like they're really running an offense. As you said, a lot of one-on-one, a lot of isolation that doesn't involve a lot of other players. And look, they brought in Murray as the big offseason acquisition. They identified they needed a point guard. They went out and got one. They used him all in training camp. They used him all in preseason. And now he's not there, and that's going to take an adjustment period, certainly. But I'd also argue you shouldn't look as bad as you do right now. This is still a team with Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, and for some of these games, CJ McCollum too. They shouldn't be putting up under 90 points like they did the other night, I think. You know, just because you don't have a point guard doesn't mean guys can't cut off ball. Doesn't mean you can't do something else in the meantime. And look, it's tough to really kind of change the direction you're going and what you want to do from a philosophical standpoint during the NBA season. You know, since the opening night game, I don't know if this team's fully had like a practice to work in new concepts and things like that. You really only get about 20 practices or so during the course of an 82-game season. So it can be difficult. But while Murray is their point guard, there's Jose Alvarado on the bench. You know, you've used CJ McCollum in that capacity before. Guys can still move off ball. Now, you can still run your offense, even if it's not DeJounte Murray and it's someone else in there. It might not be as good. It might not work as well, but you can at least do that. But you're not even seeing that from the New Orleans Pelicans right now. And that, I think, is what worries me so much about what we're seeing from them offensively. Murray's a good player, and I don't want to devalue him here in the slightest, but if he's the only reason guys cut, if he's the only reason you run pick and rolls, and you don't do those same sort of actions and movements with another point guard out there, there's bigger problems here with the team, and that's how I viewed these past three games. It's one thing to lose them. It's another thing to lose them in such dramatic fashion and disappointing fashion. You know, you talk about losing Murray. The Golden State Warriors didn't have Steph Curry. And in that first game, they still took 46 threes. They didn't really miss a beat without him there. Certainly, he's the better player. He's going to elevate them. But they still kind of have an identity, core concepts they want to go out and execute. Pelicans should have those with DeJounte Murray. And even if he's out, you still do that, even if you're not as good as it. But you're not really seeing that from the team. And to me, that's what's kind of worrisome with it and something the Pelicans need to figure out. Because, look, you're going to be without Murray for 5-6 more weeks at a bare minimum here.
Yeah, it's like no identity, and the lack of two, almost energy. Almost looked like somebody like Dracula visited all of them overnight and drained them from their energy. And you see it a little bit early in the game, and then all of a sudden, it's like there's nothing left. And I think you saw it two nights ago. You saw it last night. This team down the stretch, no energy at all. And the turnovers are so big, and sometimes defensively, there's really no defense here. So that's a lot of troubling things on this basketball club today.
Yeah, I agree. Look, the turnovers Murray would help with, certainly. But in that first game against the Golden State Warriors, I didn't think the Warriors' defense was particularly amazing. At times it was, but it was at times like a defender just breathed on a Pelican and they dropped the ball and lost the ball, and all of a sudden the Golden State Warriors were racing down the court. for a steal. I think they hit 31 points off turnovers in that game. That's where you really lost it. You know, you're an NBA player. You don't need to lose the ball as much. And while Zion has less spacing to work with, you've got to run some actions. You know, even came from, you know, out of timeout plays where you call a timeout, you have a chance to drop a play. They just drew up an isolation play for Zion Williamson. In that first game against the Warriors, Jordan Hawkins, the three-point shooter on the team right now, took one three-point attempt. Is there not a way to kind of generate those kind of looks and shots? They took 22 three-point attempts in that game. Their goal is 40 this year that they've been very public in talking about. It just seems like this team is a little bit listless at the time, and they're just lost, and they don't really know what to be doing, and it's carrying over into other ways. You mentioned the defense, Mike. That's been their calling card the past couple of years. They've always been a good defensive team under head coach Willie Green, but right now they're allowing points in the paint at a rate they've never done before. A team with Zion Williamson is losing the points in the paint battle every single night so far. That's a big concern. This team wants to get steals. They need to get set, get their defense back, and then try and get those steals. And they're not capable of doing that right now. No Herb Jones in last night's game is certainly a part of it. No DeJounte Murray, too, because he's made an all-defensive team in the past. But to just not try on that side of the ball is the biggest thing. And that makes me wonder if they're tuning the head coach out a little bit, if he's just not getting through to them, because you shouldn't see that. There was a play late in the fourth quarter in last night's game where Brandon Ingram just lost sight of his man. It was Brandon Podziemski, and he passed the ball to the corner and then just cut straight down, right, just straight towards the basket from the top of the three-point line. And Brandon Ingram, who was staring at him, seemed like unprepared for that sort of thing, like just didn't really know what was going on. And I thought that was emblematic of what you've seen from the team. That shouldn't be the case under a Willie Green coach team, but that's kind of what you're seeing right now. And that's why I view this upcoming four-game homestand as kind of make or break. This is a really important year for the New Orleans Pelicans, obviously. They need to show some growth here. And in a Western Conference that's going to be really competitive, every game matters. You know, we want to see them winning at the end of the season and peaking, but that does you no good if you're not in the playoffs because of losses earlier on in the year. The games right now count in the standings just as much as ones at the end of the year do. And dropping three winnable games, three games you probably should have won that the Pelicans were favored in when it came to those, is really disappointing and something that could come back to bite you. So they need to figure this out, not even sooner rather than later, but right now before this four-game homestand.
Jake, looking at two, you mentioned the four-game homestand about to start for this Birds, this banged-up Birds squad. What can we expect out of this Indiana Pacers team coming into the Smoothie King Center tomorrow? I know they had a rough game, a wild-scoring game last night against the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, look, this is a team that's going to get out and run and score, so you better bring the energy because they certainly are. They play lightning fast, led by Tyrese Haliburton. They're actually one of my favorite teams to watch with the way they play. Not a whole lot of defense there, so you're going to need to kind of keep up with them when it comes to scoring. And if New Orleans can't score against this Indiana Pacers defense, there's real big issues here when it comes to the offensive design of this team. But this one should, in theory, be a track meet with two teams that aren't defending right now. You know, it could come down to math. And, you know, when I've come on with y'all before, I've talked about this. The Pelicans need to shoot threes. They look like they're running a version of offense from 1990 or so right now. And that's not going to cut it in 2024. You look at the Golden State Warriors that first game, they doubled them up from threes and makes. And you can go bucket for bucket with a lot of other teams. But if you're making twos and they're making threes, they're pulling away from you every single shot. And you're never going to catch up in that regard. You kind of need to take that approach with the Indiana Pacers. You're going to need to keep up with them scoring-wise. So you need to make sure you're prepared for this. And this could be a game that's like 145-140 at the end of it.
Follow him at Nola Jake on X or Twitter. Thank you for the time, Jake. And you can check out, obviously, all his work on the Locked On Pelicans podcast. Hopefully we can get back into that win column tomorrow. Appreciate the time, Jake.
Thank you, Jake.
Of course, thanks for having me on, y'all.
For all things Pelicans, make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Pelicans podcast on the Odyssey app, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Taking a break, coming back, talking a little Tulane football right after this here on WWL. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Our Treasure Chest Thursday rolls on, getting into some Tulane Greenway football. For that, we welcome in one of the best, Tulane beat writer for the Times-Picayune and New Orleans Advocate and publisher of the Green Wave Report. Check it out, Jerry Smith. Jerry, how you doing, man?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Gary, they got you working on a Thursday now. Pretty soon it'll be a Tuesday and a Wednesday during football season. they're going to switch it around on us.
Also got me working on a Halloween, and then we'll be working at Thanksgiving when Tulane plays Memphis. So it's the holiday season for Tulane football. No team has played on both Halloween and Thanksgiving since two teams in 2020, and I'm not sure any team has ever played a Thursday night game on Halloween and a Thursday night game, and obviously on Thanksgiving on top of that. But that's the deal. So yep, I'm working.
We in the crazy world of football, and Gary. Yeah. Man, I didn't know when they hired Coach Sumrall that if you could repeat, so to speak, what we saw with Willie Fritz. You know, a lot of people are upset with Coach Fritz because he left and went to Houston. I always say this, you did your job when you leave it better than how you took it. And he did. And he really did a great job foundationally building this football team. But anytime you have a coaching change, man, you got a lot of new faces. And you think about it, that's over 45 new faces on this Tulane football team. And if I'd have told you the record today, and I'd have told you 2 weeks before the season, and they're starting a redshirt freshman quarterback that's never taken a snap in a college game, look how well this coach has gotten his team believing in themselves, and it doesn't matter if it's a 20-17 game or a 59-52 game. They're ready to play. Coach Sumrall has done a fantastic job.
Yeah, and I'm being totally honest when I tell you I'm not surprised at all, because that's how much I like John Sumrall. Willie Fritz won 23 games and one conference title in the last 2 years going into this year. John Sumrall won 23 games and two conference titles at Troy after inheriting a team that was pretty talented, but it had a losing record the year before he went there. He just gets it. I could tell he got it when he was a Curtis Johnson assistant, when he was the co-defensive coordinator under Curtis Johnson back in 2012 through 2014. And he's just gotten better from there. And you're right. It's not easy. And, you know, he really did change over the roster, because at the end of spring, he realized Tulane might be in a little trouble if they didn't add players, because they lost a lot of seniors and a few key transfers off of the Willie Fritz team. He went and got 11 guys, eight of whom have started at least one game after spring practice started and after spring practice ended. And most of those guys are starting every week, and they fit in with the rest of the team. I think they're only going to get better the rest of the year, because they're getting comfortable with each other now.
When you have a football team that can run the ball, it really protects your quarterback. I'm not taking anything away from what Mensah's done. But, man, that offensive line and Makai Hughes, and then if they got, you know, you see what Tate Thompson has done and how they've used him, and the backup running backs have really come through. It does go to show you that as much as the game has changed and three, four wide receivers and throwing it all over the field comes down to offensively, if you can run the football, you can protect your quarterback if he ain't a star. And I think you might have one. But, you know, he's still early in the development there. But, man, what has Makai Hughes has done for this football team?
Yeah, he's just been unbelievable because he's just as good off the field as he is on the field. But yeah, I mean, this guy, the last 2 weeks, he's carried the ball 57 times. and that's another thing. John Summerall, he looks at his talent and he figures out the best way to win. He's not worried about overusing this guy or doing this or that. I mean, he had the second leading rusher in the country last year at Troy. So he's used to this formula. Yeah, I keep waiting for an opponent to really gear up to stop Mekhi Hughes and try to and load the box, because it really hasn't happened yet in conference play. Charlotte really struggles against the run. They're in the hundreds in run defense in the FBS. I would assume that they would come in and stack the box tonight and try to force Mensah to beat them, because, yeah, Mensah has a lot of talent. He's played well this year, but he only had to throw 13 passes against North Texas because they did not do that. And Mekhi Hughes ran all over them, and then so did Duda Barnes when he came in too. So I think Darian Mensah is ready to have a huge night if Charlotte tries that. But I've just been surprised that opponents haven't made the number one priority to slow down Mekhi Hughes.
The one thing I thought you'd maybe get a little bit more production with defensively is maybe a little bit of pass rush. Because the secondary, man, you had a lot of new pieces there, and he was bringing in guys all over to come in. And that's been solid, but I thought you'd get maybe a little stronger push up front.
Yeah, it was starting to get better. And then on Saturday, they didn't have Patrick Jenkins. His mom had passed away unexpectedly the Sunday before the game, and he didn't play. I think that made a huge factor. It's not that he has a big sack total himself, but he commands so much attention in the middle of the defensive line that it frees other guys. But sure, Aiden Huntington, they were expecting more from him. He started to come on. He didn't do a whole lot against North Texas, but I do think it's better. North Texas has a great scheme. They have a terrific coach in the passing game. That dude, when he was at Incarnate Word, they put up insane numbers. He went to Washington State as an offensive coordinator for 1 year. He had Cam Ward as his quarterback that year, and then in 2 years at North Texas. So it was sort of there. It was a tough scheme for Tulane to face. But we'll find out tonight, because Charlotte has had trouble protecting the quarterback. Their freshman quarterback is a pretty good athlete, but he doesn't have a clue about pocket presence or anything like that. I think he's run for almost minus 80 yards this year. And this will be a telling sign tonight whether Tulane can get a lot of pressure on them. I think they're ready to do that. But you're right. The sack totals have not been what they were expecting going into the year.
Whisper in the ear of the North Texas coach, I would say, go find you a defensive coordinator and try to get you some defensive players. I'm not talking about stopping people. I'm talking about slowing them down. Because the first half, they didn't even slow them down. I mean, Tulane went up and down the field.
They lined up with like three high safeties to start the game, as if Tulane, as if they were playing a spread offensive team. It didn't make any sense. I mean, you can't. Yeah, they weren't physical enough. And they were pretty. They're a small team too. I noticed that when Tulane, they're a better team than Rice, who Tulane beat the week before. But Rice is a much bigger physical team. So you're right, because North Texas has a passing offense to compete for championships, but you can't. you got to play defense too, and that just hadn't happened yet.
Play defense.
You look at this Tulane team, obviously going into this matchup, opened as a 16-point favorite. I think it's now 14.5. But what does this Charlotte team do that could cause problems for Tulane tonight?
Yeah, they've been really inconsistent this year. They brought in 44 transfers, which is tied with Colorado for the most. They've lost by 18 or more four different times. But their last home game, they put up 50-plus on East Carolina, helped get East Carolina's coach fired. But East Carolina actually has a pretty good defense. Their offense isn't any good. And then they went to Memphis last Saturday and took the lead with 80 seconds left in the game. And Memphis had to drive down the field and get a touchdown to pull out a win at home. So they've showed some signs that they can be dangerous. Their freshman quarterback, Deshaun Purdy, he didn't even start against Memphis, but he sure finished. He's got a rocket for an arm. I mean, he threw a 61-yard pass in the air on their go-ahead touchdown drive, and it didn't even look like he put any effort into it. So, again, I think the key is Tulane needs to get pressure on him, make him go to his secondary receivers, because he doesn't know how to do any of that yet. He just has he's a really good arm talent. The rest, I don't know. I mean, Charlotte's coach, I mean, they're a pick near the bottom of the league. He's a bit of a goofball. It's just hard to get a good read on whether they're really a dangerous opponent or not for Tulane tonight.
Definitely always appreciate the time, Gary. Have a great game, and be talking to you soon. Hopefully the Green Wave keep it on rolling, get six straight tonight.
Thank you, Gary.
That's their plan.
Gary Smith, Tulane beat writer for the Times-Picayune and New Orleans Advocate, and also the publisher of the GreenWaveReport.com. Check out his work there. Also at Gear Smith on Twitter. Taking a break. We'll be back more from the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill right here on WWL after the break. Happy Halloween. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. Checking out all the action on the TV screens here right now, and also getting ready for Thursday Night Football this evening. Houston Texans at New York Jets. That kickoff you can hear right at WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. We're going to check in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Philip, I see, is on the line. What you got for us today, Philip?
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
All right, Philip.
Boo dat.
Hey, babe.
Hey, look, I see Kool-Aid's got a hamstring injury. Mike, what's... I don't understand all these hamstring injuries nowadays. What, these guys don't stretch? Or what's your opinion?
I've talked to a lot of people, you know, in being involved with Thibodeau Regional, and you talk to people that there and also at Ortho LA, the orthopedics, and a lot of them, how much stretching are they doing? Because that is something that normally will loosen that hamstring up and getting you ready. That part I really can't answer. And also, to hydration. That was something Dr. David Elias brought up to me, that he – if you have a hamstring injury, it is something that you have to be cognizant of hydration. And that was an issue with Marshawn Lattimore when he was at Ohio State. And he sort of had to change diets a little bit to get it back. But I think it goes back down to stretching more and also the hydration part.
Do you think any of these issues, too, with maybe not just hamstrings, but overall, are the lack of prep that you get now in the off season with training camp and limited OTAs?
Yeah, I wouldn't blame the hamstring on that, but okay, I know where you're going. No question about it. I've talked to way too many coaches in that. What do you expect? I mean, you not in pads, and then preseason you play with a couple plays.
Right.
And so you're expecting them the first couple games to go out, and that all's going to be well? No, you're going to get hurt. And it's league-wide, not just the Saints.
Heading to the news. We'll be right back with more sports talk at the Treasure Chest right after this.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Welcome back into our Halloween Thursday night edition at the Treasure Chest Casino Sports Talk. We're inside the Game Bar and Grill as we're counting down to Thursday Night Football. An interesting one on tap tonight. You heard Charlie in the Sports Flash mention the New York Jets favored at the Houston Texans this evening.
Yeah, and man, we've had a couple people on actually pick them, the Jets, to win. I don't know what they've been watching, but again,
I can't be worried too much about a guy, the wide receiver being down for the Texans and Stephon Diggs.
They got more than that.
Right, exactly.
They got a lot more than that. Now, to me, the straw that turns the drink for them, other than C.J. Stroud, is Joe Mixon.
For sure.
And when he's in the lineup,
the Bunk will sure miss him.
And again, Joe got his issues,
right,
and he didn't want to be in Cincinnati. That was obvious, and he did what he had to do to get out. But Joe Mixon, big-time runner in this league. He's a power runner, and he creates speed with that lower body power. He's a hell of a football player. And, man, defensively, they haven't hit stride yet, but you can see that they got some big-time talent on defense for him. So, man, can Aaron Rodgers make a play or two tonight? I don't know. I would stay away from the game, to be honest with you. Too many people have picked the Jets. To me, the obvious thing is the Texans are a much better team, but sometimes that don't work that way, right?
No, it doesn't seem to compute there. When the line came out, I was like, really, New York's the favorite in this matchup, when clearly that the Texans are the better team. I guess being
the Jets have played El Stinko all year long.
And I was going to say, being at home might be their only advantage in this matchup.
That's the only advantage. Because, man, Rodgers, okay, you get your coach fired, and you claim you don't know nothing about it, and then you talk to the owner the night before, and we didn't talk about it. Come on, be real. I didn't tell the owner to go out and get Devontae Adams.
Sure,
what? Come
sure,
on.
Sure.
Come on. And then they signed Hassan Reddick.
Right.
You know, they finally signed him. How long that was? Your team had him for a while, and they said, oh, enough of that.
They sure miss him, too.
Do they? And, pass rushers are a premium in this league.
Right.
And so you can cut up and do sort of things, and you get paid again, and that's Hassan gets paid again.
Talent, baby.
That's all what it's about.
We went through the Saints injury report, Mike, and the Pelicans injury report for tomorrow night's game against the Pacers in the Smoothie King Center came out. We know now that C.J. McCollum and Herb Jones will be out for tomorrow night's game against Indiana. Meanwhile, you got Jordan Hawkins, Eves Missy, Daniel Tice are listed as questionable going into this game. And we do know, obviously, guys like a
What's wrong with me saying? Right lower abdominal contusion? Would that mean a bruise?
Right, exactly.
So, again,
we know the other two guys were out, for the Pellies, too. And I'm drawing a blank. Thank you. Yeah. Deontay Murray and Trey Murphy. I couldn't get Trey's name out of my mouth, even though that's what he hits. Should be easy.
the one thing, if you follow sports and sports talk, you get to learn about every part of the human body. Because, man, we go through it weekly with injuries, and so you get to know it. I stole that
CJ,
line.
Right adductor soreness.
Yeah, and I stole that line from Dr. David Elias, who's on with us from Marthel Lace. And, Mike, I'm teaching you something about medicine. I know some things about a lot of things, but now I'm getting to teach you about medicine, what I had to learn. So, yeah, it's funny.
Looking at tonight's game, Mike, you know, you're going into this matchup, the Texans at the Jets. Really disappointing for New York. Obviously, they had high expectations this year, and it's unreal to think they're in pretty much the same situation as the Saints right now.
Exactly, same spot. The same record, in the same spot. And, you know, if this doesn't work, then Woody Johnson got to blow it up.
Right, you want to talk about blowing it up. The New York Jets are at a point right now that – and Aaron Rodgers mentioned this last year. He's like, if we don't get things done – this coming season, we're all going to get fired.
Everybody.
Right, exactly. Nobody's safe.
Other than Mr. Johnson. Okay. Mr. Johnson owns the
check,
team.
Right.
He stays there, but from Joe Douglas on down, you can see that's going to be a clean sweep. And dysfunctional at this point, where you're letting your 40-something-year-old quarterback
kind of
making
show,
personnel decisions. Not real good.
Looking at the Texans squad, though, obviously C.J. Stroud has been as advertised since coming into the league, and just really awesome to see this guy keeping developing.
Better.
And yeah, exactly.
He's
and
better.
Definitely, you don't see it, I feel, enough nowadays with these early picks of quarterbacks in the draft where they end up panning out. Maybe you're better off going number two overall. Look at Stroud and look at C.J. Daniels, right?
Bobby and I were talking about this, that, you know, you think about C.J. and I was like, you know, I think that the Texans saw he had talent, but it was more maybe potential of what he could do.
Yeah.
And he was never known as a scrambler or a runner. He sort of locked into the pocket. Now, he does have movement skills, but he's not known for his running ability. But it's how quickly he can process information. And that, I think, is the key. I talked to Sean Payton about that. And he was like, man, Mike, that's the hardest thing to judge from college to the pros, how quickly you can process it.
When that pressure's dialed up even more.
And like he said, you know, guys, you play in the SEC, that's really good talent.
Yeah.
You come in the NFL, they all look like that. You know, so it's a different story. I think I give C.J. Stroud a lot of credit there, that how quickly he has developed as a quarterback and a good one in the National Football League. And what he's played a year and a half. And last year he didn't really have a running game.
Right.
Now you got Joe Mixon. And if he can get his receiving core healthy, we know Diggs is gone for the year. But they got to get Nico Collins back in the lineup. I think he's such a big part of that. And their offensive line, man, off the edges. Are they getting pressure on Stroud? So he's having to throw it real quick. They put a lot of pressure on people. And the other guy that, as advertised, Will Anderson.
For sure.
From Alabama. He's a Pete Jenkins guy.
Talk about hitting in drafts, man. The Texans did it last year, right? Yeah.
And Pete had always told me, Mike, man, I've really worked with a lot of guys. He's not the most talented, but he's the most focused, and he works so hard. And he said he's only scared of one thing in life. His three sisters, who used to beat the crap out of him when he was young. He said, that made him really tough. And he said, Mike, that's the only thing that scares him. Or the three sisters, if they used to gang up on him and, you know, kind of left him there. Okay, say something again now. But he said, I think the three sisters, you're taking care of it. Everything's good.
Well, right, exactly.
But we made you tough.
We are going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some more NFL, talking about Saints game, obviously, and all the action around the league. Getting with Dalton Wasserman, PFF analyst, also co-host of PFF College Football Show. So we'll do some NFL and college talk coming back after the break right here on WWL, the Treasure Chest Casino. See you here right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Here till 7 o'clock, and then Thursday night football gets underway. Week 9 action starts with the Houston Texans at New York Jets. We'll have that for you right here. Happy to welcome in now Dalton Wasserman, PFF data analyst and co-host of the PFF College Football Show. Dalton, how you doing, man? Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. How you guys doing this week?
Doing great. Looking forward, hopefully, to a matchup this week for the Saints. It can't get any easier for them going into this matchup. I mean, if they can't snap this six-game skid on Sunday against the Panthers, it might be completely time to pack it in for this squad.
That's the best part. When you do talk show radio in Charlotte, they're saying, man, if we can't beat the Saints, we'll never win another game this year. So we catching it the other way.
Right.
Hey, something has to give, and I'll tell you what, those two attitudes might just lead you to a tie, but no, I'm kidding. But no, I think you're right about the Saints' angle on this, especially with Derek Carr coming back, and the offense should just stand a better chance to be more functional than it's been in the past couple weeks, right, when you talk about having the passing game, getting back into the play action that they've wanted to get into, and Carr will release the ball a little bit quicker as a veteran guy than we've seen from Rattler and from Jake Haener to kind of protect that offensive line a little bit. And Carolina's defense, honestly, you know, I know they didn't have high expectations coming into the year, but they were a decent unit last year, and it's really bottomed out. I've been kind of disappointed by Carolina's defense. So this is, I think, more for, you know, considering both teams' fan bases may be saying the same thing, I think it's more of a get-right spot for the Saints.
Absolutely. When you look at it overall in the NFC South, before the season, I thought the Bucs were the team to beat again. They got a lot of injuries, and, you know, it's not easy to replace big-time guys off the edge. When you got Mike Evans and then Chris Godwin goes down for the season, and yet they put up a lot of points on the Falcons' defense, which goes to show you the Falcons' defense ain't that great either. But I think right now the Falcons are in kind of the right spot. If they're going to win it, you got to win it this year with a team that doesn't seem to have a great pass rush with the Bucs, and who knows who plays receiver for him from week to week. I think this is the spot. And Kirk Cousins, we always thought, man, no matter where Kirk played, if it was Washington, Minnesota, or Atlanta, he was great against the Saints. Now, see, he's doing the exact same thing against Tampa. Now, he was lousy against Seattle. But I think right now, for me, Atlanta looks to be the team in the driver's seat.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, and they do have their flaws, and the Falcons really don't have a great pass rush either. But at least offensively, you know what they have, right? You have Cousins, who's always solid. He's been solid for his whole career. You have two good running backs back there behind a good offensive line that can really run the ball. Drake London's good on the outside. Kyle Pitts has seen kind of a resurgence at tight end now for them. I think you have enough pieces where you feel like, even if they're not the most complete team, say, in the entire conference, you do feel like they're the most complete team in the division, right? They have enough on defense to keep them in games. And Cousins, I think the biggest thing that you're seeing is that he's just brought that veteran stable presence, right, that they didn't have last year with a Desmond Ridder or with a Taylor Heinicke or, you know, whatever they've been doing really since they got rid of, since they had to let Matt Ryan go. But no, I think Cousins has been a very stable force for them. They have a stable force really throughout their entire offense. And you mentioned it, all three of the other teams obviously have question marks or they're really struggling. So the Bucs, look, they need to stay afloat and get healthy. The problem is they got all these injuries coming through the toughest part of their schedule, right? I mean, they're playing Kansas City this week, and then I think it's San Francisco next week. These are games where they couldn't afford not to have those two guys at receiver especially. So Bucs are trying to stay afloat, and I'm with you. I think you have to look at the Falcons as the favorite in the division right now.
And, man, the NFC North, when you look at that in Chicago, you know, my grandpa used to always say this. Some people, they're born with bad luck. Sometimes, you know, you take one step forward, two steps back. No, last week, that was a lucky play. And, man, listen, I'm the biggest Jaden Daniels fan in the world. But Bobby Hebert, he would say, Mike, every time I threw a Hail Mary up like that, guess what happened? It got intercepted. And nothing happened like this here. But you look at that division, how good Detroit is, and they're not just beating people. They like steamrolling over them. This week's game, your thoughts, going up against the Packers. I know Jordan Love is not close to being 100% with that injury, but I think it's going to – these two kind of football horses are going to make that race to the wire between the Lions and the Packers. And I think one of the two, they end up playing on Super Bowl Sunday.
I think it's entirely possible, and I think you look at the Lions, and I think when they're rolling and they have the momentum going like they have it right now, I think they have the best offense in football. It's just the play calling, Jared Goff sitting behind maybe the best offensive line in football, St. Brown on the outside, Gibbs and Montgomery, you know, at tailback. I mean, they just have everything you could want on top of A-plus schemes that use all these guys to their optimal strengths, right? And I think the Packers, you know, the Jordan Love thing, obviously they need Jordan Love to be as close to 100% as he can be to beat this team, but they spent a lot of the offseason fixing their defense for the purpose of beating teams like Detroit or San Francisco or the elite teams in the NFC, right? So now it's like they've gotten better. They've definitely gotten better. They forced a lot of turnovers. Xavier McKinney leading the league in interceptions, but this is going to be the week where we really find out, I think, especially with Love compromised, we find out about Green Bay's defense, if their defense can keep them in this game, because if the Lions get rolling, and that's a locomotive when it really gets rolling, they can score four, five, six drives in a row, it's a real problem for any team in the league. So Green Bay, I'm looking at their defense, trying to keep them in this game, then maybe even slow the game down a little bit with Josh Jacobs on offense.
When you look at, man, quarterbacks throughout the years, and you guys do a really good job breaking down the film and everything else, and we saw what C.J. Stroud did last year. But when you watch Jaden Daniels, it's like, this guy's a rookie? You know, have you seen somebody hit this league with that type of impact in year one at the most difficult position to play? And it's every once in a while you see that. I know RG3 did, you know, in his rookie year, and then he got all beat up. But to watch Jaden, I thought what C.J. Stroud did a year ago was remarkable. Jaden's playing better than him, which is really saying something in his rookie season. He's played, and I thought he was always going to be a good player, but I never thought he could play like this quickly.
I'm with you, and I loved him at LSU. I actually thought he was the best quarterback coming out of this past draft. I know all the hype was on Caleb Williams, and Caleb Williams is great. He's going to be really good, but Jaden, just a special, man. I mean, you talk about the dual threat ability and making all those explosive plays that he does with his arm and his legs without really putting the football in danger, right? When he came out of college, you know, we have a thing called turnover-worthy plays where it's like, okay, how many times do you really put the football in danger? And he did that at the lowest percentage of any Power 5 quarterback that we had charted in 10, 11 years of doing it. So the fact that he makes all those explosive plays and you don't get a whole lot of negative with them, he helps in the passing game, obviously, with his arm, throwing especially over the middle of the field right now. He's been incredible. And then in the run game, you got to remember, Washington's a top two or three rushing team as well. And I think the added dimension that he brings with his legs, whether it's him running the ball or even just the threat of him running the ball, holding those backside defenders, Jaden has just turned around that entire franchise. It's incredible to see what he's been doing. As long as he stays healthy, I mean, you're getting talks now about not just rookie of the year, because I think that's pretty clear, you know, right now it would go in his direction, but maybe even some MVP votes, because what he's got that team doing that was the second worst team in football last year, it's incredible. I'm with you. I thought he would come up and be a special player at some point. I did not think he would do it starting with the second or third game of his rookie season and then just turning it into a, you know, I mean, he's been a top five quarterback in the NFL this season, I think.
Delt, when you look at it from a college standpoint, the big game this week, Penn State, Ohio State, and I do TV, and one of the guys I do it with is Rich Marty, former Penn State player there. And for the last 4 or 5 years, I've asked him, hey, is this the year Penn State's going to be at Ohio State? And he'd always shake his head, no, they're not beating Ohio State. So this coming Tuesday when we did the show, I asked him, what you think? And he's like, I think this is the year. He said, defensively, they are as good as I've seen them over the last 5 or 6 years. And the quarterback situation is interesting, you know, because the backup guy now, boy, he's making a ton of plays. Your thoughts on Penn State, Ohio State? This would seem to be Franklin's year. If he's going to do it, he got to beat Ohio State this year.
Yeah, no, I agree with that look, and I think it's for Penn State. It starts with, they got their new offensive coordinator coming over from Kansas this year, Andy Kotelnicki, and he's just brought such a different level of diversity to their offense in the run game, in the pass game. They're making explosive plays, because the last few years their offense was very vanilla. There just wasn't a whole lot to it. Maybe they had talent, but this is a case where their schemes, I think right now he might be the best offensive play caller in the country. That's how good he's been this year. And Ohio State lately, it's been a struggle, right? I mean, they lost to Oregon. They really played a very tight game that maybe some people thought they wouldn't with Nebraska. And I don't know that Ohio State offensively is clicking on all the cylinders that maybe we thought they would. So you've got a game. I think actually it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be in attendance for the game. It's going to be awesome. But you've got a game, I think, that is going to be a physical defensive fistfight. I think you got two of the 5 or 6 best defenses in the country. I think that's going to show up. And you mentioned Penn State's quarterback situation. Yeah, it could come down to whether or not Drew Aller is healthy. That could be the difference in winning and losing the game. But one of the adjustments, I'll tell you, if it is Bo Prevula, their backup quarterback, is that I mentioned Kotelnicki, their offensive coordinator. He's prepared for any situation. He was prepared for it last week at Wisconsin in a tough game. He'll be prepared for it one way or the other this week. I think it's as close to a toss-up game as you could possibly have. I think it's going to be a low-scoring defensive fistfight of a game.
One of the things in watching them when they played against USC Penn State was the offensive coordinator you brought up, and, man, I think he's doing a great job, but he saw USC never adjusted to the tight end. What he caught in that game, 14 passes or 15 passes? And my thing is, okay, after a while, you got to do something to slow them down, and they didn't do that, and that coach kept banging at it. You know what? They're not stopping it. I'm going after them. And he went for the jugular there. Now, they were lucky a little bit. I don't know what Lincoln Riley was thinking at the end of regulation, the way he handled those final 2 minutes. But they've got some weapons on offense that could maybe do enough to get them over the hump in a tight game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And like you mentioned, the tight end there, Tyler Warren, one of the keys to their offense is finding all of those complex ways to line him up all over the place and get him the football regardless of where he's lined up. I mean, in that game, you mentioned a play where, hell, they found a way to line him up at center and throw him a touchdown. It's incredible some of the play designs that they have worked in there. But if there is one thing I'm worried about, and I'm glad you mentioned that game, because they were down 20-6 at halftime in that game. And if there's one thing that Penn State does have a mini issue with, they get off to slow starts. It takes them usually a quarter and a half to really find the rhythm, especially offensively, and find what they think is going to work. I'll be honest with you, this year in the second half of games, they've been maybe the best team in the country, but they got to get off the better starts, because against this Ohio State defense, you don't want a scenario where you're behind like 20-6 like that game, or you're down 7-0, 10-0 early, right? Because it's an elite defense they're going against, right? USC's got an okay defense. It's not near on the level of Ohio State. I think Penn State, they may want to change it up and maybe try to find some explosive plays, especially in the first quarter. That's what I see, is they get off the slow starts, then they make the adjustments, then they get it together and they win ball games. But against an Ohio State team like this, you got to play all 60 minutes from start to finish.
Dalton, a huge letdown for the LSU Tigers this past weekend, obviously on a bye now this week. But your thoughts, early thoughts, I'll say, on their matchup next weekend when Alabama's coming to Baton Rouge.
Man, oh man, it's going to be a circus of a game. And I know those two teams are always playing circus games, but I really think the loser of that game is going to be out of the playoff with having a third loss already. And there's a lot of flaws with both teams. I mean, we've seen LSU. I think the issue for me is not having enough consistent balance on offense. I think, look, Garrett Nussmeier's really good. We know this, but there's times when I think they ask him to do too much and just drop back and throw the football. And it's just not the same as Jaden Daniels last year, where he gave you that extra dimension with his legs, right, where it's like they're asking Nussmeier to do so much from the pocket to beat SEC defenses every week. It's tough. And Alabama, I mean, we just haven't seen them execute at a high, high level every single week, right? So you've got two teams that are both very good and look really, really good at times. And then you got also the same two teams who don't always play to their potential, or they do have some pretty clear flaws here. So I think it's going to be a very tough game to pick. I don't know if they've announced the time yet, but I'm assuming that's going to be a night game in Death Valley, like it always 30. Is in that game. And yeah, it is. Okay. So, I mean, it's going to be two. I think what you're going to see is two desperate football teams, because I think a third loss could very well eliminate either one of them from the playoff.
Your thoughts on Jalen Milroe, because I thought you'd see the leap in him as a passer. And he's skilled as a runner, and last year when they played him, if LSU was playing two-hand touch, he'd have scored every touchdown that he scored. They didn't even touch him. I mean, he was running free last year, and then what you saw last week, what Reed did against him against A&M, man, if I'm DeBoer, my thing is I'm going to make you show me you can stop that read option. And I think Milroe more used as a runner against LSU.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's where the strengths have to lie there for Alabama against LSU's defense. Because you're right, that second half against A&M, it looked like they hadn't seen a read option all season, right? It was just a problem, and the schemes and everybody just got sort of out of whack, and then the momentum really kept going. I think with Milroe, the two things you have to do are not let him kill you for a $150 on the ground, and you have to prevent the deep shots, because if there's one thing that he has a problem with, it's kind of like Anthony Richardson with the Colts, where he has a problem throwing underneath and staying patient and taking what the defense gives him, right? As long as you don't give up those big plays down the field, say to Ryan Williams, who's been great at receiver for them, the true freshman all season, he's a home run hitter. That's what he is, as a runner and a passer. If you prevent the home runs, then Milroe really starts to struggle, because he doesn't go out there and say, you know, just to use the baseball term, like hit singles and take those 6-yard throws. The one time that he did it was in the Georgia game, and then you thought, okay, maybe he turned a corner, but then the next few games he went right back to the old habits. So Milroe, really, if you prevent the home runs, if you prevent the deep shots and you stop the run well enough, you're absolutely right. It's a clear plan. Alabama is very talented in offense, but it's very clear what you have to do against them also with those two things.
Great info, Dalton. Appreciate your time, and check out all your great work, obviously, at Pro Football Focus. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Dalton.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys, as always. Thank you.
Thank you. PFF has got you covered all season long with the best bets, tools, and analysis in the game. Sign up for PFF Plus today to unlock all their famous player grades and premium stats. Push to the playoffs in your fantasy league, and in-season tools and award-winning rankings from fantasy expert Nathan Janke. Just sign up for PFF Plus today for less than $10 per month. We're going to take a break. When we get back, triple option. Sounding off after this on WWL. We are back here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. Steve Geller along with Mike D'Attelier, Charlie Long in studio, getting ready for our triple option feature right now. And Mike, you usually throw it to me. I'm going to throw it to you to lead off today.
Yeah, 65 years ago tonight. And, man, I saw it as a kid. Every sportscast would either start with it or end with it. Billy Cannon's Halloween night run. And, Charlie, you can gear it up.
He stands on his own 28. He gets a pass from center. He boots it and gets another nice kick away going way downfield. Billy Cannon watches it bounce. He takes it on his own 11. He comes back upfield at the 15. Stumbles momentarily. He's at the 20. Running hard at the 25. Gets away from one man to 30. Still runs at the 25. Some 89 yards for a touchdown. Listen to the cheer for Billy Cannon as he comes off the field. Great All-America.
65 years ago tonight, and we did some shows with Billy. I mean, you talk about, man, he got stories. Good. You think Bobby got stories? No. he can top him. Oh, man, Billy had some stories. But the crazy thing about that is I got to talk to Paul Dietzel, who was the coach at LSU at that time. And, you know, his nickname was Pepsinant Paul. You don't remember Pepsinant. No, Luke remember Pepsinant. There used to be a toothpaste one time. Okay. Man, he had that toothy smile. And he said, Mike, we had a rule at LSU. You can catch it on the run, catch it on the fly. But if that ball bounces, do not touch it. And he said, okay, I see it at the corner of my eye. Billy makes a move up, but he sees it's going to bounce. And he said, you know, all of a sudden, I think Billy was going to let it bounce. The ball bounced right to him. And he was like, no, 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 Billy, no. And he said it went from no, 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 Billy, to run, Billy, run, Billy, run. And if you watch that film, watch the referee trailing Billy Cannon. Man, Billy Cannon was a really fast dude. That referee is like 2 or 3 yards behind him. Man, that referee could run pretty good back then. But it came down to a stop at the end. Ole Miss had a chance to win the game late. And who makes the stop on the fourth down play? They played two ways back then. Billy Cannon.
On Halloween,
on
baby.
Halloween night.
Guys, I'm talking about a Saints player has been dealing with concussions since he came into the league. Chris Olave suffered one his rookie year, two his rookie year, actually, and suffered a third just this past weekend and missed the Denver game, obviously, dealing with that. He's considering wearing the Guardian cap for this matchup, and it just seems like
I would think
a no-brainer to me. I thought he would have been in it last game as well, but didn't wear for whatever reason. But he is considering it, and for those who don't know, the Guardian cap, it's intended to reduce the risk of concussions. The leaks at the league meetings talked about it, said they believe it's a 52% reduction rate wearing the cap. And I know it looks a little strange, but you have that padding around there with the covering. It still looks – it's hard to decipher it being different from the other NFL helmets out there. Now, I don't know – how different of a feel is it for the player on the field, obviously? Does it impede them at all? That's the only reason I would think that Olave wouldn't wear that.
No, but
to save your head, it seems like a no-brainer, obviously. No pun intended there.
Because of the fact, okay, a lot of people think you might be soft wearing that. Okay, NFL players, man, you're a tough guy to play in the NFL. You got to be.
Right.
But my
nice
thing
cap
is,
you got on.
My thing is, you can call me what you want. But after my career is over with and I can think straight,
yeah,
okay, that's what matters. And I've made a lot of money. And Chris has got a chance to do that. You got to worry about your health today, but also long-term health with it. And if you think it can help you, wear the cap. If you believe that, wear it. Don't worry about it. People say, oh, you're not a tough guy or anything else. Come on. They would wear it if they had money and their career on the line. So,
I'm sure the Saints team is recommending to him.
I bet they are. I bet they are. Because you want him out there,
right,
and you don't want him taking another hit. And he's had some lately.
Right.
Right,
you
know, to the head.
Even last game, without the Guardian cap on, I was like kind of holding my breath like, oh, no, here we go again.
Yeah, I know when we had Jen Hale on, she did the game in Miami with Tua. And she was was a major.
He's not wearing
and
one
he
either.
Said, I'm not. I said, no, Jen. Somebody got to convince him. He got to wear that. And she said, Mike, nobody's going to convince him.
No, no comprende right there.
Oh, no.
Charlie, what you got for us on Triple Option today?
Guys, Mike, you say it all the time, but running the football still works in the modern-day NFL. And Brian Baldinger, our friend at Odyssey, put out a tweet earlier this week. He said the highest running percentage teams through the first 8 weeks, and he added their winning record right next to it. So I'm going to go one by one and just kind of talk about this real quick, guys. The Eagles number one in the NFL, run the ball 55% of the time. They have a 5-2 record. Steelers, number two, they run the ball 54% of the time. They're at 6-2. The Ravens at 52% of the time, 5-3. The Lions, 52% of the time, 6-1. And the Commanders are number five. They're at 6-2, guys. And then Baldy adds here that there are six others that are all flirting at around 50%, and that's Buffalo, who's 6-2, Kansas City, who's 7-0, the Chargers, who are 4-3, Green Bay, who is 6-2, Minnesota, 6-2, San Francisco, who's 4-4, but they've dealt with a ton of injury issues, as we all know. And Baldy puts at the end, is this still a passing league? And so I remember we were talking after the first 2 weeks where the Saints were able to run all over both Carolina and, you know, Dallas. When Mark Schlereth came on and talked with us, Odyssey NFL insider, he basically said that it's kind of been a shift, right? Where for years it was a passing league, and so teams drafted accordingly. They kind of drafted these smaller, more speedy kind of defenders. And to combat that, some of these teams, and the teams that, as I mentioned, have winning records, are playing great football right now, are able to run the ball and bully these opposing defenses. So it's kind of an interesting swing of kind of back to the old-style run game, guys. As Mike, you always say, you got to be able to stop the run and run the football. It seems like that's obviously a key for a lot of teams right now.
You know why I say it, Charlie? Every time I go to Louisiana line camp, all them 11 or 12 NFL assistant coaches and Pete Jenkins and Kevin Mawai, they say, man, if you can't run it, you're going to lose a lot of games. And we could see the general shift in it. And it's been gradual. But I think this year you see it even more. That now, okay, you want to play football chess against me? You get that smaller guy. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a bigger guy on that. I'm going to run you. You get in front of Derrick Henry and see just how tough you are. Because Derrick Henry, they had Olay moves before, but he sort of invented defensive backs to get away from him in Olay moves. Because that guy, he'll run over you. And I do think now you're going to see more and more teams shifting where they pick running backs and linemen, offensive linemen. Because I think that's certainly the key to a running game. You're going to see them get picked much earlier than ever before.
That is a wrap on our triple option feature. We will take a break here on Sports Talk. Be right back at the Treasure Chest Casino, so stay tuned right here on WWL. Hey, I want to tell folks, join Bobby Hebert and Mike Dettillier, a special edition of Sports Talk. You guys are going to be at Rouse's Market in Gulfport on Saturday. Don't miss a chance to meet up with the Cajun Cannon and WWL's NFL and college football analyst, Mikey D. They'll be at the brand new Rouse's Market and Hansborough Square Shopping Center. You can hang out with the two Cajuns, talk some football, make some groceries with Bobby and Mike at the new Rouse's Market on 1444 East Pass Road in Gulfport, Saturday. That's 1-4 right here on WWL and the free Odyssey app. We'll continue breaking down the Saints and what they've got coming up with Carolina right after these words here on WWL Saints Radio.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network. Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Yes, indeed. Happy Halloween, everybody. Welcome on into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. Got the TVs going with all kinds of sports action waiting on Thursday Night Football this evening. The Houston Texans at the New York Jets. Looking forward to Week 9 start. And then, obviously, Sunday we got Saints at Carolina. I don't want to say a must-win game, but it's a better win game for this.
You better win, right?
We're going to be talking to Anish Sharoff, the voice of the Carolina Panthers, after the first break. And we kind of mentioned that the Carolina Panthers, another squad dealing with a bunch of injuries, much less a quarterback situation that is very uneasy.
Yeah, because, okay, Andy Dalton's a full participant.
Right.
The last 2 days, and he comes out and says, I'm not playing against the Saints. So, listen, I told Charlie this long ago. People don't want to believe that an owner has that type of control. David Tepper does. He's got that type of pull here to say, I'm the one who wanted Bryce over C.J. Stroud.
Exactly.
And you play him because I'm taking heat that he's on the bench. Play him. And so I think their best chance to win, though, would have been with Andy Dalton at quarterback. I'll be honest with you. Bryce hasn't done anything to assure you that he can be that guy. Doesn't have a lot of weapons. And no excuses on that part. But man, has he struggled. Yes, he struggled as a player.
That's why you look at a lot of people complaining about Ms. Benson as the owner of the Saints, but she's not meddling in the football operations part of things, whereas you know a guy like Tepper or Jerry Jones is constantly going to be in your ear about what you should do roster-wise.
Okay, I've said this before. Man, right now the Saints are bad and boring. The one thing with the Panthers, they bad, but, man, the owner don't make them boring.
No, that's true.
You know, because you don't know where he's going to – what he's going to say, what he's going to do from week to week. And I think sometimes he made so much money, and God bless him. I mean, he is a very good businessman and very good investor. But you think the same sort of things apply in sports, and it doesn't quite – it's not quite the same.
I know better than you.
And even though he never had – well, he was a part owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers at one time.
Right.
And so that's how he got the in to buy the Carolina Panthers. So he's a live wire, no insulation. So you got what you got, and they are bad. But, boy, he sure don't make them boring because week to week you don't know what he's going to come up with.
It's hard to comprehend too, Mike, with this franchise. We've seen the true talent that they've had has been shipped out the door.
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't think they would get rid of Brian Burns. I mean, he's a really good football player. And they sort of said, you know, I don't want to pay you, so we'll play with the Giants. I'll trade you. And that's exactly what they did. And it's been kind of nonstop. So before the season started, I got Jake on. And so Jake DeLome was, I told him, I said, man, Jake, you know, they got some people thinking they'll win 5 or 6 games. He said, Mike, you said that? I said, no, not me. I said, I've had other people think they can win 5 or 6 games. He said, I didn't think you were hanging around with David Tepper because he's the only one that thinks they'll win 5 or 6. He said, they lucky to win 2 or 3. Now, he said this before the season,
right,
and he's the color analyst for the Carolina Panthers. It's not like Jake is really scared somebody's going to do him anything. He can go back to Lafayette, and do things. But
just telling it like he sees it, right.
But I think he's absolutely right. You know, they would be lucky to win 2 or 3. And he saw very early in the training camp and into the preseason, like, I ain't seen nothing that would make me think this team would win 5 or 6 games. But that was Jake, you know. Hey, man, he come out of blasting with it, and I think he's absolutely right about it.
Yeah, I did hear him with Mike Haas on Tuesday night mentioning the fact that, you know, things obviously not great right now, but he's trying to look for the bright side of things and does feel that the franchise is at least heading in the right direction compared to where they were right now a year ago.
Well, I'd agree there. I'd agree.
It was a total cluster, you know what, last season.
But, you know, boy, you invested so much in Bryce Young.
Right.
And if that doesn't work out, you got some major issues. And you still owe the Bears a second-round pick in 2025 in the Bryce Young trade.
Ouch. Yeah. You talk about getting, you know, trading up for that young quarterback, and then that's what happens. You end up leaving that cupboard bare.
And think about –
who wants that job, right?
You know, the one thing is he lacks patience as an owner. And so now, you know, if I'm Dave Canales or Dan Morgan, I'm like, man, what's going to happen after the year? You know, and this is not a quick turnaround. Even though if you have a great draft in 2025 and free agent pickups, okay, you're not turning this team around. You 2 years at best away from being a competitive team at best.
It doesn't happen like the Texans did.
Well, boy, that's the biggest surprise for me, Steve.
That was a quick turnaround there.
I look over the last maybe 10 or 12 years, because Deshaun Watson, he carried him on his back.
Right.
And I've never seen a player lose it that fast. You talk about he was a big-time player, and coaches, players all said the same. I hated playing against him.
Yeah.
He was that good, and then that year and a half off, and maybe things off the field also circumvented that, but what happened there to bring in D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson?
Right, it was like that perfect storm they had.
And everything worked for them. And they have a general manager who is very good as a player personnel guy to fit what – because he talked about it in the offseason. He said, I think it's a big thing for us finding the right fit for the Houston Texans. It's not off of a stat sheet. Or it's not off of his height, weight, speed, how much he can bench press, anything else. It's about, does he fit with the Houston Texans? And he said, I think that's the key for us to continue this, to get those type players. Because not everybody's Watusi, okay? Some guys, there are very few guys that you can put them on any team and they play the same. You got to find guys that sort of fit what you do. And the Texans will never be able to do that. And as bad as they were, I never thought they could swing it around this quick.
Checking in on Mike on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Where you can sound off to 504-260-1870. Let us know what you're up to this Halloween. I know we got Jimmy and Gretna on the line. Happy Halloween, my man. What you up to?
Hey, man, we're about to go to the rich neighborhood and get all the good candy. You know what I'm saying?
The full-size bars.
No.
Not the fun size, the full-size. You know what I'm saying? They're going all in. We're about to – I'm loading the kids up now. We're going to drop them off, and, you know, they'll call us up afterwards. And us adults, we're going to have an adult beverage, if you know what I mean. Now, listen, let me say something. Tulane tonight, that is crazy stat, Steve and Mike, how Tulane's playing on a Halloween night tonight on the road. Then they play again Thanksgiving night. That's pretty cool. They've had a great year. I'm really impressed with Summerall. I mean, the fact he gave the keys of the car to this freshman. And I've always been a believer that you get a quarterback with 25 or more starts in college football, you're going to have a really good player. I think that's what made Brock Purdy what he is. We joke about Nick Mullins, but he's made a career. He had a lot of starts. Jaden Daniels, a lot of starts between Arizona State and LSU. So at first I thought it was going to be the Oregon transfer for Tulane, but this Mensa kid looks like the real deal if he stays healthy. And look, pivoting to the Pelicans, you know, we should have won at least one of those two games. I know everybody's frustrated with the Saints. They're focused on the Pelicans a little bit, but now they're kind of doing the bed. Like Mike says, they got a lot of home games coming up starting tomorrow. Explain this to me. We sent Carlo Mackovich to the G League, and then we're playing guys yesterday that were basically off the street. Explain that to me. I don't get that. I know the injuries are mounting. And explain to me what's going on with Herb Jones with that injury.
Carlo Mackovic, Jimmy, and Antoni Reeves, the team has called them up today from Birmingham. So I think it was the case. I don't think they anticipated, obviously, these injuries happening and needing these guys right away.
Okay, and we talk about this a lot, Jimmy, of – when in the offseason you think about what could happen and who you could lose. If you lost Devontae Murray, who was going to take his place? How much thought got into that part? Okay, they got nobody on this team today that can be that facilitator. No one. And now you stuck. You stuck with what you got. And so the anticipation of what could potentially happen. And that was something Bobby don't let me say. But Jim Finks used to say, man, I put up so much time of things that could happen. And are we good enough to overcome it with this player? And he always felt there was never a huge drop off between the first guy and the second. And because he wanted to keep it that way.
Sure.
Now today, look in the NFL or the NBA. It is Mount Everest drop-off with players and the performance that happens afterwards. So you got to think about what could happen, what could potentially happen to your basketball team. And they seem to be a rudderless ship right now on having someone take control of the team and making other players better like Murray would have done. And They were so good on defense, and you don't see an ounce of that today. They're not good on defense. Now, me say, I give him credit. He's been the one guy that you could say he's better than what we thought.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasant surprise for sure.
No question.
We are taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll be diving into Carolina Panthers with their voice, Anish Sharoff. Helping us break down this team. What's so different about this squad from week one? We'll find out about that and more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Breaking down week 9 at Carolina to help us with that. The voice of the Carolina Panthers, Anish Sharoff. Appreciate the time. Fresh off an airplane. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm just about to check into my hotel here in the parking lot of a Renaissance here in Boca Raton, Florida.
Ah, very nice. So looking at this matchup on Sunday, Anish, what's the biggest, I guess you would say, difference with this Carolina squad from the last time the Saints saw them in week one?
Well, it's a loaded question. I would say for starters, it's a team that's not as healthy as it was going into the season. You guys saw in that first game, Derrick Brown, who's the best player on the team, suffered a season-ending knee injury. That was big. They've been banged up really in the front seven for most of the first 8 weeks. They're starting to get a little healthier in there. And then, you know, Bryce Young played early. Then he was benched. Andy Dalton started. They beat Vegas. Then Dalton injured his thumb on his throwing hand in a car accident last week, and Bryce was reinserted into the starting lineup against the Broncos, and you know, didn't do that great. Had a touchdown pass on his opening drive, and then really a whole lot of nothing until the very final drive when the game was decided. So Bryce will start again on Sunday, but it's been a tough go. You know, it's been a tough go where, if you remember, the first pass of that game for the Panthers, their first play from scrimmage, was an interception thrown by Bryce Young against New Orleans in the opener, and it's kind of been a harbinger of things to come.
Anish, they traded off Deontay Johnson. He was a guy brought in that, you know, because of Xavier Leggett coming in as a rookie, looked as though Deontay was going to be the guy. He was going to be the main catch guy for the team, and then, you know, he comes out with that, man, I can't play every position. I'm just playing receiver. I told Charlie, our producer, he ain't going to be there much longer. Well, sure enough, he didn't last a week, so to speak. He was gone. The receiving core for Bryce now, and looks as though Leggett's now on he's on the injury report, and Adam Thielen looks as though he's hurt too. So what's happening on that end, on the catch part, and will they try to get the ball more to Jatavion Sanders, the tight end?
Well, the guy I think you should be on the lookout for is a player by the name of Jalen Coker, undrafted rookie out of Holy Cross. Steve Smith, former Panther great, was really high on this kid coming out of college. Panthers sign him after he doesn't go drafted. Got hurt early in camp and then played pretty well in camp and actually didn't make the 53, so anybody could have had him. Signed to the practice squad, was continuing to really push on the practice squad, and since he's been bumped to the active roster, he looks like he's a real find. Almost like the Saints had with Rashid Shaheed a few years ago. Not the same type of player, but big guy, 6'3", really good at contested catches, and they found something in Coker, a guy who can really be a part of the turnaround. Thielen looks to be getting healthier. There's a chance he plays this weekend. We'll find out for sure Friday. Leggett, I think, has kind of had a typical rookie season, been up, been down, but he's been a big guy in a red zone. He's got 3 touchdowns. And, you know, JT Sanders, same deal. He was kind of thrown into the fire earlier, the tight end, fourth rounder out of Texas, thrown into the fire early in the season with some injuries to that position. He has settled into it. I think that's going to make him a better player. Didn't do a whole lot against Denver, but the previous 2 weeks, he set new career highs in receptions and receiving yards, and he's, you know, starting to settle in. So the silver lining in 1-7 really has been that this draft class can be a foundational piece and a foundational base for this franchise. But to your point on Deontay Johnson, chemistry and locker room and all that stuff matters. Culture matters, especially
with a first-year head coach, especially with a young quarterback, especially with Dan Morgan, who's in his first year as the full-time GM. So, you know, that was kind of one of those where, you know, Deontay Johnson maybe didn't want to be there. I don't know all the details, but I think word had gotten out that he was not a happy camper.
One of the things that can always help a rookie quarterback or second-year quarterback is to have a running game. And I think that's the key for the Panthers. If they have the path to win Sunday, is they got to be able to run the football and protect Bryce a little bit, that not every throw has to matter. Has the running game progressed from week one or early in the season? Because, you know, the bell cow guy has been Chuba Hubbard there. And because I always think, man, when you don't have a running game to complement a young quarterback, you got problems big time.
The running game's been the strength of this team, really the run game and the offensive line. And I'm not sure it totally showed week one, but when Andy Dalton took over and, you know, you're watching the line block, and even, you know, some of the plays where Bryce made mistakes or was sacked, at times that seemed it was more of him not trusting his protection and getting out of the pocket too quickly. He was better about that in the game against Denver. Denver had one of the best pass rushes in the NFL, and the line, even with a couple of injuries, held up pretty well against that Broncos team. The O-line, this is a legitimate top five, top 10 offensive line, and it should be. They, you know, spent a lot of money on it in the offseason, and Chuba Hubbard, really since week three, has kind of taken off. He's fifth in the NFL in rushing. He's not, I think, you know, toward the bottom of the top 10 in attempts. At times, they would like to use him more, but they've been behind by so much in these games, it takes you out of the run. And the new wrinkle that you guys might be seeing on Sunday is the debut of second-round pick Jonathan Brooks, who this team loves. Rookie out of Texas, running back, can pass, can catch. He's physical. He's slippery. Great contact balance. He's coming off an ACL injury, which he suffered toward the end of his season at Texas. It's been about a year since he's had the injury to the ACL surgery recovery. So, you know, there's still the trust factor. Do you trust the knee? Do you trust the cuts? But they feel he's got a chance to be a special player. He was the first running back taken. So this run game, this offensive line, that's what they lean on. And, you know, if they got to throw the ball 40 times a game, that means they're probably behind and it gets you out of the run. And that's kind of what happened week one against New Orleans, where that game was over so quickly and the deficit was so big quickly they could never get into the run game.
What are the biggest keys for this Carolina squad heading, you know, going into this game against the Saints? Obviously a team, both teams know each other well, but obviously the matchup in Carolina, so the home field advantage is there, but where else can the Panthers take advantage of the Saints? Is it that run game?
I think it starts there. It starts with the run game. The Saints have had their issues on defense, and then, you know, what kind of version of Derek Carr shows up, right? If Derek Carr is going to be the guy, the Saints have had, you know, their issues and their injuries on the offensive side of the ball, and the Panthers starting to get a little healthier on the defensive side. Still no Derek Brown, but Clowney was out for a few weeks. He's back. Josie Jewell is back. So they're starting to get some pieces back on that side of the ball. I think we all look at this from the Panthers side as a winnable game, given the current state of the Saints. And frankly, you guys have a better read on this than we do. I mean, Dennis Allen was on the hot seat going into the year. If they lose to 1-7 Carolina, you know, there may not be a week 10 for Dennis Allen.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge concern for him because it hasn't been pretty. Obviously, the six-game skid right now, you mentioned Carolina's struggling too, and it's hard to believe that Panthers come away with this win. All of a sudden, boom, the Saints and Panthers are tied in the NFC South at 2-6. 2-7, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. And I'll be honest, after what we saw from New Orleans week one and then to follow it up week two against Dallas, I know they've had a rash of injuries, but boy, the way it's crashed and how quickly it's crashed was a surprise, where 2 weeks in, they looked like they could be one of the real surprise teams in the NFC.
Manish, definitely appreciate the time. Have a good one and be hearing you on Sunday with the call.
Thank you, Manish.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right. Voice of the Carolina Panthers, Anish Sharoff, joins us there as
so
the Carolina
Steve,
Panthers get ready to host them Saints.
You heard what I said. Doing shows in Carolina, they said, man, this, the way the Saints are, this is a team we should beat.
Right.
And we say the same thing
right,
here.
Get right game.
And so you heard Anish say exactly that because I've done about three since Monday, and they all say the same thing. You know, with that on the schedule, hey, we can get right here.
I get it. Obviously, we've seen this team the last couple of games, and it's just been painful because it looks like a shell of what we've seen from Saints football.
No question about it. But them getting Brooks, and I'm pretty sure he may be on what do you want to call a pitch count.
Right, right.
On how many carries.
Still scared
against
that Saints
I always
rookie,
thought that if he would not have had the knee injury, he would have went in the 20s in round one.
Yeah.
He was that good. Excellent runner, between the tackles, got a burst to the corner, can catch the ball coming out of the backfield. Then you get the ACL, and you know that's a 1 year, you're on the shelf. When you got an ACL injury, you can bank it. It's 11 months to a year.
You heard Sharoff saying that there's a chance he could be back in action on Sunday against the Saints, and we know that run defense has been really, really
been
a
good.
Huge concern for them.
That's for sure.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk and come back with more as we get ready for Thursday night football here at the Treasure Chest Casino. It's taking a break and be right back after this on WWL. Here at the Treasure Chest Casino in Kennebra, hanging out for our Thursday night football between the Houston Texans and the New York Jets. Getting ready to start 7 o'clock on WWLAMFM.com. And the Odyssey app. We were talking about Saints Panthers, and coverage of that will start 8 a.m. Sunday. First Take with me and Charlie Long. Time for the Saints Nation to check in with us. Then at 10 o'clock, you can join Bobby Hebert for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. Game Time then with Deuce McAllister and Hoss is at high noon. Just turn down those TVs and sync up to your boys, Mike and Hoss. Mike Hoss and Deuce McAllister. And then when it's over, me and Cajun Cannon on the Ciroc Point after. Till a, what's that, 6 p.m.?
Yeah, 6 p.m.
Saints Panthers, that's 10 hours of wall-to-wall coverage, Sunday starting 8 a.m. right here on WWL and the free Odyssey app. And obviously, we talked about it there with Anish, and he mentioned it too, like you said, Mike. We're looking at this as an easy kind of layup or a get-right game, and the Panthers are thinking the same thing where, well, yeah. We've got the Saints coming to town. Time to get win number two.
Yeah, it's a 5-foot jump shot. That's what they think it is. And so something's got to give here. And I think the big thing is getting Derek Carr back. And not that he's, a franchise quarterback, but he gives you the best chance to win. You know, you played the young guys, and they had their moments at times, but there was just no consistency with it. And I think, you know, the one thing with Derek, he can kind of settle everything down. This team will be much better settled when they get Eric McCoy back. Because I think that's the big key, that get your center back there. And I think you'll be a better team with Eric McCoy back in the lineup. And that's still a couple of weeks away.
I felt like last week I was kind of surprised. You know, Taysom Hill was back in the mix, and we just really didn't see much of his involvement. And it was seemed very limited. And just looking forward to him getting more involved in this offense because he brings that big physicality factor to me.
Peculiar play calling. and how do you again, I'm not a play caller, so but, man, how they use some of the guys is sort of strange at times. But, again, you had a lot of people rolling in. Their offensive line didn't give them a lot of help in the passing game. Man, that was a lot of leakage up front.
Right.
And at times you hit a big running play, but, Steve, that was about as bad an offensive performance as you could see. Now, it was really not good.
As you would say, pitiful.
It was pit. It's three word. Pitiful. is right. It wasn't good at all.
I was just thinking too. Like obviously, you mentioned, you know, the problems with the offensive line. You would think maybe Taysom would get more of those shots at under that, center, but it just didn't. It didn't materialize.
The way things have went, I'm almost to the point where
you're second and third guessing about days.
Had this lasted any longer, I'd have said, let him play quarterback.
Yeah,
start him at quarterback and let him play.
No, because you obviously see the guys have no shot, the youngins and Jay Kaner and Spencer Rattler. It really isn't fair to them considering all what's missing on that offense with the line and the weapons.
And remember when we had Drew on, I think is the most telling comment. and we're talking about quarterbacks, and he said, man, you know, to play him right now, sometimes you got to play him, you know, because where you picked him at, you got to play him. And then injuries got involved here, and then you didn't keep an experienced backup. And so you thought about that. If something happened to Carr, you have nobody that's driven the car on the highway in the NFL.
Right.
And that's a big difference. Yeah, because, man, sometimes we get them texts, football's football. Oh, yeah? Okay. Man, if you think high school football is the same as the NFL, you're kidding yourself, but it's a big jump. No question about it. And I think at this stage, Steve, you got to look to see if you got to find something to hang your hat on. What you do best with the roster you have,
yeah,
that's healthy. You got to find something that works.
Well, you talked with Anish earlier, and you were saying, you know, the run game and stopping the
for
run.
Them.
But that's something the Saints haven't been able to do on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and the Panthers haven't stopped the run. They've run pretty well, but they haven't stopped the run.
So hopefully we see AK go off on something.
And also, too, and a consistent pass rush. They got no pass rush with the Panthers.
Right.
Zip. And so you can't cover forever. You know, there's a point where coverage, you know, breaks down. The receiver got the advantage. And, you know, so you got to take advantage and try to hit some big plays. I think Chris Olave being more involved here because of his connection much more to Derek Carr.
Right.
I think you'll see a lot of Chris Olave in this game being targeted.
Mike, some bad news for the Rams I'm seeing here on social media. Puka Nacua was limited in practice today but left early because of a knee issue.
That ain't good.
Man, they just got him back.
He's a guy, too. You can tell he's talented.
Yes.
But, you know, again, man, the injury bug has hit him almost the same way it's hit Cooper Kupp at almost the same time.
It's amazing when you see a talented dude like that, and how does he slip so far in the draft?
Okay, he didn't hit the measurables. He didn't run fast. He didn't jump high. Okay, so I don't know sometimes how you get caught up in that.
Right.
You know what? Because the way I did it, I was always looking for a football player. Okay? And then sometimes the best players aren't the fastest. they don't lift the most weight. But you fall in love because you see that. And a lot of times what we don't see is a head coach get involved. And that's what he has seen. Okay? He has seen the workouts. I can see him on tape,
right,
but he really hasn't kept up with them. And they got a lot of head coaches that have their fingerprint on some of those picks.
Yeah, I guess you got to really rely on that scouting department, obviously.
Yeah, I think the later the draft picks are, that's when you really lean on it. I know Coach Payton, he told Bobby and I this when I asked him about draft choices. He says, I know the top 100.
Right.
Like I said, after that, I got to lean on the scouting department.
Well, we're going to lean on a break right now. When we get back, we'll be closing things out here at the Treasure Chest Casino as we get ready for Thursday Night Football, WWLAMFM.com, between the New York Jets and Houston Texans. We'll be right back after this, so stay tuned on WWL. As we close things out, I want to remind everybody you can have this show delivered directly to your phone absolutely free. You can listen to all 4 hours, one specific hour, or just the hottest clips. Download the Odyssey app and follow all of us, Tommy, Newell, Sports Talk. It's that easy. We realize you can't always be listening to the entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy. You listen when you want, how you want. That goes for this show and all of the shows that you love on WWL. Just got to download that free Odyssey app and take control, or just tell your smart speaker, play WWL. The Tulane Green Wave driving down the field here against Charlotte have been put it to them early. We'll see if they can get this into the end zone, but man,
They've converted 2 fourth down plays.
Right, I was going to say, they're doing their number on the Charlotte 49ers. I can't believe there's 49ers in Charlotte, Mike.
Okay, but one thing Coach Sumrall told me Tuesday, we're going to take some chances. And he's already done it.
He's living up to it, right?
He's living up to it. But, you know, I think he feels on the road, short week. Let's jump on them early and give them no momentum and take the crowd out of this game, and we put points on the board.
Closing thoughts on this Saints-Panthers matchup coming up on Sunday, Mike. obviously got to be feeling good about the matchup, but what are your keys to getting that Saints victory?
Run the football, stop the run. Yeah, come on. And then if you stop the run, then you can put all the pressure on Bryce. Make every throw. I dare you. Yeah. So you got to stop the run. And also, too, for the Saints, you got to have a better running game to complement Derek Carr in the passing game.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and everyone at the Treasure Chest Casino. For Luke Augusta, Mike Dettelier, and me, Steve Geller, have a good night, everyone. Talk to you soon. Who dat?
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.